come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
Rosen intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
And welcome to Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. Alongside Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. So glad you could join us for the next 60 minutes as we'll be discussing all the latest revolving around the New York Giants. 201-939-4513. That is part one to interact with us here on the program. Part two would be on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. We want to remind you, Big Blue Kickoff Live brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to play for free today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. Steve Palazzolo from Pro Football Focus, senior analyst, will be joining us momentarily to break down the Giants draft class. In the meantime, though, let's set the stage here for what's at least upcoming for the remainder of the week, Paul. And we touched on this a little bit yesterday, rookie mini camp on Friday, where they'll have an opportunity to really get a taste of what this draft class looks like, number one, in addition to some undrafted free agents that are brought in. But, you know, one of the things that we touched on briefly yesterday, and I think it tends to get overlooked in the NFL conversation, is the impact that undrafted free agents have on the league, not just the Giants organization, but overall. You know, everybody talks up and hypes up the draft picks and the free agents, but, you know, you could do a lot of damage to your roster in a good way by having some guys brought in who may have fallen under the radar. They work hard, they have something to prove, and then all of a sudden they're impactful players down the road.
Well, we came up with the number yesterday. I shouldn't say we came up with it. It was an NFL official stat that, based on recent trends, there will be approximately 45 undrafted rookie free agents make NFL rosters this season. Now, think about it. That's an average of more than one per team. In fact, it's about 1.5 per team. So, you know, and the Giants in particular over the last 10 years have been real good about having as many as 2 or 3 guys in a given summer make it out of this crop that's coming in this weekend. So, you know, there's no question that there are guys who have, oh boy, I think it's been my experience in the past that there have been guys who were 4th or 5th round picks, potentially, who got phone calls early in that third day where teams would say to them, hey, we're not sure what's going to happen with today's draft, but if you're not taken, understand this, we want you in here. Those calls, I know, get made fast and furious during the final round, but there are some calls that actually get made even a little bit earlier. And, hey, just want to let you know, Joe, we got you on our radar. We're interested in you. We got some priorities of other positions we got to take care of. We got to fill them in the draft. We really need to get those guys. But just want to let you know, we do know about you. We like you. We were at your workout. We think you have a chance to make it in this league. We'd love to be able to talk to you as soon as the draft is over. We'd like for you to consider coming to us as an undrafted rookie free agent. And then what happens then, the draft ends. The phone calls are continuing to be made now. You're making your follow-up calls. The agent's making calls. And he may have 4, 5, 6, 12 teams that want Joe Schmo, wide receiver, to be in their rookie free agent camp. And so now the bidding takes place because you are allowed to give signing bonus money to those guys. That money comes out of your cap. It doesn't get publicized, but usually it's $5,000, maybe $10,000. It can go up to almost as much as $20,000, which is, I believe, what the Cowboys, when they gave Tony Romo his signing bonus as an undrafted rookie free agent, I think it was like $15,000, which at that time was like unbelievably high.
Well, and also Lyle Collins, too, last year, the offensive lineman who did not get drafted. Remember, you know, there was a lot of interest across the league, and Dallas landed him. Money, I'm sure, was part of the equation in addition to opportunity and so forth,
no doubt, which is
the same thing for a lot of other players. They're going to say, well, you know, what's the best chance for me to maybe make the roster and so forth? A lot of that all gets taken into consideration. But it is interesting to understand at least the dynamics behind that. And that was something that Mark Ross also touched on when he addressed the media, saying it's really a frenzy once the draft wraps up to determine who you want to bring into rookie minicamp. So that's on the horizon, obviously, coming up on Friday. For those of you watching on Twitter, we certainly appreciate you tuning in. To watch the remainder of the program, head on over to Giants.com. Lance Medow, Paul Dottino here with you on Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. We are now joined by a very special guest as we continue to review the Giants draft class from 2016. And we are now joined by Steve Palazzolo, senior analyst for Pro Football Focus. Steve, Lance Medow, Paul Dottino here with you on Giants.com. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
Doing great. Thanks for having me, guys.
Hi, Steve.
Well, we certainly appreciate you chiming in, Steve, and I know that you provided a great deal of insight leading into the draft. So before we get into the specifics on individual players, your thoughts on how the Giants maximized the value of the draft overall with this class?
I thought they did a really good job overall. I wasn't enamored with the first-round pick of Eli Apple, but we can get into that in a minute. But I thought where they grabbed Sterling Shepard at number two and Paul Perkins in the fifth and Jarrell Adams in the sixth, I think they added a lot of talent up and down the roster, even though they were limited by only having those six selections.
Well, let's go big picture for just a second. Again, before you get to the individual guys, how well do you think the Giants fared in comparison to the other teams in the NFC East?
Well, I think the Cowboys certainly had a little bit of a boom or bust type of draft and, you know, certainly upgraded immediately with Ezekiel Elliott and then perhaps long-term with Jalen Smith. So overall, pretty good. You know, the Eagles, it all comes down to Carson Wentz, essentially. They put so much, you know, so much into just getting him. If he ends up panning out, which I think, you know, down the road he could end up being a pretty good quarterback. You know, that's essentially what their draft hinges on. And I thought the Redskins got pretty good value, too. They were all in the B range the entire NFC East from my grading standpoint. I thought Josh Doctson was great value, and they got, you know, Sua Cravens was a solid player in the second. So I don't think anybody really had a terrible draft in the NFC East.
So based on the draft, and of course free agency is still something that's in play over the course of the next couple of months as well, you think the entire division really did get better?
I do, yeah. And I was harsh on some grades when I went with some other teams, but all the NFC East teams were in that B to B plus range, and I do think that they all added valuable pieces during the draft.
Steve, you alluded to Eli Apple, so let's start there as we break down some of these individual pieces. You know, there were maybe a few different directions the Giants could have gone at that 10th overall pick. Corner was a need, given the fact that they could use somebody in the slot. You know, where do you see Eli Apple's ceiling overall in the NFL in terms of how the Giants can use him? And, you know, if you did differ, where else do you think the Giants could have gone in round one?
Well, with Apple, I do think he's one of the best press man corners in the entire draft. He still probably has a little bit of work to do with actually finding the ball. But as far as locking on to receivers, he does an excellent job. My question is with how they're going to use him. You know, last year they played zone coverage a lot more than most teams in the league. So if they're going to change their scheme for Apple, I think it makes a little bit more sense. Perhaps that's what, you know, they have planned with the three cornerbacks, you know, heading into next year. But if they're going to play the zone concepts, I think that's where Apple struggles a little bit. He's not great, you know, playing off coverage. He's not great in space. He's not necessarily good at reading concepts as a zone defender. So I think there's certainly room to grow with Apple's game. And as far as, you know, what they left on the table, you know, in general, I'm just a big fan of those couple top wide receivers. I think a guy like Josh Doctson would have been great, but I do love the Sterling Shepard pick in the second anyway. And as far as corners go, I think William Jackson was just better overall value at Houston. I think he's a little bit more scheme diverse and actually has more upside with his size, speed, and movement skills.
Steve, it's interesting you brought up William Jackson, and I'm going to throw out another corner because he went right after Eli Apple. And, you know, within the fans and across the NFL landscape, there's always the debate. The difference between Eli Apple, Steve, versus Vernon Hargraves, and the Giants front office was asked about this. You know, they said Eli Apple was their number one corner on the board. What is the disparity in your mind between Apple versus Hargraves, who did go 10 versus 11?
Yeah, that's a good question there, too. I think Hargraves is a better all-around player, just a better pure football player, can play more coverages, he's more scheme-diverse, can play a little bit better in zone. I think he's got excellent closing skills when he's playing off coverage, great ball skills. Apple's probably a better pure press man corner, and he has the size that you're looking for or that the NFL is looking for, but I do think Hargraves is a better all-around corner, more scheme-diverse, and we'll see if they're, you know, it really depends on both, you know, how each player progresses and how they're used. But I do think Hargraves is a more versatile player.
Now, the real interesting pick for me, Steve, isn't so much even Shepard in the second round, because universally everybody seems to believe that he's going to be a big play, explosive kind of guy. But what about Thompson in the third round, who the Giants are picturing as a ball-hawking center field type free safety? And, you know, there are a lot of folks who maybe didn't know Boise State and who thought that, well, okay, what's he doing there? Then there were other people who said he could have been a high second-round pick. What was your guys' take on him?
Well, I think he could have been a second-round type of pick if he didn't run so slow at the combine. But I like Thompson as more of a two-high type of safety. I think he has enough range to play in that role. I do think he works extremely well, breaking on the ball, working downhill. Did get his hands on plenty of passes the last couple of years, so I do think he has that playmaker aspect. I have some concerns about him being a pure center field safety. I don't know, angles, he's a little bit questionable at times, but overall I think it's a solid pick, and I do think it allows, you know, Landon Collins to probably play a little bit closer to the line of scrimmage where he's more comfortable too. So the idea of having Thompson play free safety, having Collins play more of that closer to the line of scrimmage strong safety role, or playing split safety, a role that kind of hides both of those guys in coverage, I think is a good way to go.
Now, Steve, Eli Apple played 2 years at Ohio State, and I guess one of the leading knocks I hear on him from the critics is that, okay, he's inexperienced, he's only played 2 years, he's got a lot of polish and a lot of coaching up to do to be pro-ready, but the Giants, of course, are going to need him to play immediately. They're not going to have time to waste on that. But they did draft the Giants. Four out of their six players were already graduated guys who had plenty of college experience. So in your mind, how pro-ready, how much of an immediate impact can they expect to get, not only out of the first three picks, but maybe even one or two of the guys that were taken on Saturday?
Oh, I think they could definitely get plenty out of guys like Paul Perkins and Jarrell Adams. We had second-round grades on both of those guys. I think Jarrell Adams, the tight end, could be the best all-around tight end in the entire draft. He's an excellent blocker at the line of scrimmage. And then he was really underused he had to deal with bad QB play at South Carolina. But he showed it at the Senior Bowl. He showed it at times during the season. He can be a nice, shifty route runner and can run the seam. I think he's going to remind a little bit of Martellus Bennett with his size, length, and ability to run the seam. And then Perkins was the most elusive running back in the nation last year from just a missed tackle standpoint, really tough to tackle, really good in space, maximized what the offensive line gave him. And again, I thought Perkins was more of a second round type of runner, and I think he was great value in the fifth. I think both Perkins and Adams can immediately contribute.
Talking with Steve Palazzolo, senior analyst for Pro Football Focus. Steve, you were talking about their third round pick, Darian Thompson, the safety out of Boise State, you know, how he may fit into the Giants scheme. One of the things, and you touched on this, that at least jumps out to me, the 19 interceptions over the course of his career, which was a Mountain West Conference record, a record for Boise State. When you try to project if a player is a ball hawk in college and how that can translate to the NFL, how difficult is that to know for sure? Well, you know, he's got that skill set in college, but can he necessarily carry that over and be such an opportunistic player in the NFL?
Yeah, it's a tough one because I don't think you can really look at interceptions and say, okay, that's going to translate one-to-one, especially you see it in the NFL all the time. A guy that has eight interceptions with Stevie Brown, what do you have, 10 a couple years ago?
Yeah.
And you know, it doesn't mean he's going to have 10 the next year. We see guys go from 8 to 2, you know, to 6 to 0. So the interceptions fluctuate. They're opportunity-based. But at the same time, I think you really want to see how well a guy reads the game, how well he breaks on the football, and what type of athleticism he uses to get there. And I think Thompson certainly flashed that throughout his career. Does it mean it's going to be he's going to, you know, have 6 interceptions every season? Definitely not. But I do think he's going to bring enough range on the back end. And again, like I said, I think more in like a too high type of safety look, I think he's going to be pretty good.
Now, you know, I got to ask you about the Clemson linebacker, because I have to say that a lot of folks didn't know about him. He had one great year at the last season where he kind of broke out of it. But BJ's the kind of guy that, you know, I think a lot of people like have big questions about. They don't know enough about him. You guys, how'd you grade him? And I know he's a 1-2 down backer. He's not necessarily a 3 down backer, but how productive can he be?
Yeah, I think that's the type of player he is. Early downs, you know, he'd be decent against the run. He's the type of guy, nothing nothing really stood out in a positive manner, or really stood out positively on cover. On tape with Goodson. He can find the football, make the necessary plays. Gets blocked at the second level at times, and will struggle getting off blocks. He's not great from a sideline to sideline speed aspect, but I do think early down, willing to take on blocks, can make the plays if he's left unblocked, and I think he'll be a solid player. But again, I don't think he stood out as a great player. He had a really nice run grade for us last year, though.
You know what's funny? When I look at him, and I've seen some cut-ups on him, and I talk to people about him who saw more of him than I did, if you just erase the name from the conversation, I'm thinking about Chase Blackburn.
Yeah, I think you could see something like that. Again, a solid, dependable guy, and I think it was good value in the middle rounds. I wasn't enamored with this linebacker class beyond the two studs at the top,
sure.
Miles Jack,
yeah,
and
sure.
Jalen Smith, and then probably Reggie Ragland. But I think there were a lot of similar players to Goodson, and he should step in and be a solid player.
Steve, Paul just alluded to the fact that he was playing behind a number of quality players at Clemson, so he really didn't get the green light to be an every down type of guy, or at least get a great deal of playing time as a starter until his senior year because of all of the playmakers on that stellar Clemson defense. With that being taken into consideration, is there rawness to him to a certain degree where, maybe he doesn't bring the same amount of experience as other college prospects, where there's going to be some growing that could very well take place in year one or year two versus maybe the Sterling Shepherds of the world or somebody else who had much more playing time during the course of their collegiate careers?
Yeah, I think you could see that with him a little bit slow to diagnose the run at times. I do think it's more of an athleticism issue, though, that does pop up, when he's trying to get to the edge. But experience is always a good thing. And, even going back to Eli Apple, he's still young and there's still some projection left to his game. So as harsh as we can be sometimes when we're evaluating, hey, this is what a guy did, certainly have to consider, experience, playing time, and age.
Yeah, no doubt. Quickly, Steve, I know it's hard because there are so many guys who are going to be getting tryouts over the course of the next week or so. In your mind, are there any guys who fell off the board entirely, who did not get drafted during the seven rounds, who you said, hey, man, I don't understand how that happened? And I'm not talking about off-the-field stuff. I'm talking about quality players who on the football field put decent tape together, who did not get picked over the weekend, who we're probably going to see somewhere in somebody's camp this weekend and will make a team.
Yeah, there's a few guys. I mean, I thought Jeremy Cash went to the Panthers at safety. I don't know if he had something off the field, but I do think he's potentially that everybody's looking for that Deion Buchanan type of safety linebacker hybrid. I think Cash has all the skills to be that guy. And then Tyaris Garrett also went to the Panthers, mm-hmm. big, tall receiver. A little raw coming out of Tulsa's system. They run a similar system to Baylor where it's just, chuck it deep or run a curl route. But Garrett really showed some good ball skills, pretty good speed. And I think both of those guys have a good chance to make an impact down the road.
Doesn't surprise me that Dave Gettleman would be very, very much on top of those kinds of guys. He was always very good at seeking out talent.
Absolutely. More ties to the Giants organization. Talking with Steve Palazzolo, senior analyst for Pro Football Focus. Steve, now that you look at the Giants roster, considering the draft is over, it was a record draft, considering they did not take any offensive linemen or defensive linemen, which actually, seemed to be a trend over the last few years. They always focus on the trenches. Considering they didn't address those two positions, when you look at the roster overall right now, Steve, what is maybe one area that they need to perhaps at least explore addressing with undrafted free agency / any free agents that may be cut moving forward?
Yeah, I look at the defensive line and say, well, with Damon Harrison and Olivier Vernon and some of the stuff that they've added, I feel pretty good about them up front there. But certainly think they should be looking for more help on the offensive line wherever they could find it. No stone left unturned on the line. They really need some good year two development from Eric Flowers, Marshall Newhouse being thrown in there. So I just think you continue to try to find offensive linemen anywhere you can and build. Build from there, but I do think they have enough depth elsewhere throughout the roster. I love adding Sterling Shepherd to that receiving core. I did think having someone dependable opposite Odell Beckham was going to be extremely important. Perhaps they could even add someone else there if they could find him, but I do think the offensive line, perhaps receiver depth, would be the two that stick out.
Final question for me, Steve, and it's a bit unorthodox, but we've seen the influx now over the last couple of years of teams giving tryouts to Canadian players a little more frequently. We're now seeing guys coming in from Europe. You know obviously about Anthony Doble, the Giants wide receiver who is here. I mean, to me, it's hard enough to project if a guy even at FCS is going to be good enough to make it into the NFL. I can't even imagine the difficulty in studying tape or studying games or scouting games in Canada or France or Germany and trying to figure out if these guys have a chance in the NFL. I'm just curious, as somebody whose business is studying plays and studying tape, what is your thought about, you know, leaving no stone unturned and even looking to other countries for football talent?
Yeah, I think with those guys, you have to start with just NFL measurables, size, speed, and those characteristics. That has to be what you're looking for. But then, if you do watch the tape, you know, there was a guy, David Onyemata, who went to New Orleans in the fourth round, I believe it was, from Canada, and has the skills and went to the East-West Shrine game. But when you watch his tape against Canadian talent, he's actually really good from a technique standpoint. And if you can hit on that, I think you have a much better chance. But I think other than that, you know, why not bring in guys that have the size and speed and see if they can pick it up at an NFL level? Maybe you run into a Julius Thomas type of situation or an Antonio Gates, guys that are so inexperienced or former basketball players that end up becoming, you know, impact players. And I think you just have if you have a nice mix of drafting good football players and then bringing in some high upside guys that you don't know what you're going to get from them, maybe you hit on one and you end up having a nice well-rounded group of guys coming in every year.
Never hurts to have a variety of athleticism, as you just alluded to. Steve, before we let you go, one other question I have with respect to this Giants draft class, and this is coming from a lot of the fans who obviously pay close attention to these guys and certainly study up. Shepard and Perkins, how possibly could they be utilized on special teams as rookies here with the New York Giants? What perhaps is the upside there if maybe they can't necessarily get a break in as a starting running back per se or a starting wide receiver?
Yeah, I think the general rule is you have wide receivers as punt returners and running backs as kick returners. So Shepard has the skills to probably be a good punt returner. He has really good hands, can catch the ball, and he's good in short, small spaces, so he can – he's that type of guy, you just make one cut, maximize an 8 to 10-yard gain as a punt returner. And then I think Perkins as a kick returner, you know, you get a little head of steam, read blocks. That's why it's more of a running back-centric type of return position. I think he could absolutely do something like that. So I just think Perkins and Shepard are both excellent football players, and they'll definitely find a way to play and find the field.
Well, Steve, greatly appreciate the time and the insight. Thanks so much for weighing in here on Giants.com.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you, Steve.
You got it. Steve Palazzolo, senior analyst for Pro Football Focus. A lot of great stuff out of him.
Let me clarify, because we were asked yesterday about the potential of special teams, which is why you just asked Steve that. Perkins did not return kicks at all in college at UCLA. Had one punt return for 6 yards, did not return any kickoffs. But he's right. I do see that skill set
carrying
being
over.
Possible as a kickoff returner. Shepard, on the other hand, spent 2 years as a punt returner at Oklahoma with limited to moderate success, believe it or not. I was very surprised when I looked at the numbers. He averaged less than 10 yards per punt return in both of his seasons doing it for the Sooners. You would think a guy with that type of explosiveness, athleticism, separation skills, acceleration, you would think he would have done a lot more on punt returns at Oklahoma. That was not the case. Yeah, of course, there are a lot of factors, and it also could be the guys who are trying to block in front of them too. But if, you know, we're getting a Twitter question, a tweet that somebody just asked both of us just now on Giants Chat, do you think that Shepard could be a punt returner like he was at Oklahoma? My answer to that is Dwayne Harris is going to be the guy. The Giants brought Dwayne Harris here to be a special teams demon on 4 units. And that's what he's going to do. Now, again, if he's needed more as a receiver or if he gets nicked up, they got to find somebody else. And, yeah, I would think Shepard would be a viable alternative in the punt return game, and Perkins could be in the kickoff return game. But if all things go according to plan and Victor Cruz comes back and the other receivers show that they can get the job done, Dwayne Harris is going to be special teamer par excellence on all four units, and don't even think about taking him off the field on specials.
Well, he's so versatile and he's so valuable in that department. I just think based on last year's experience, Paul, it doesn't hurt to say, hey, in a pinch, we've got another option. Remember, also, Reuben Randle handled some special teams too.
Correct.
And he's no longer with the team. So there's room to say, yeah, we're fine with Dwayne Harris, like you said. He's valuable. He's going to be on all four teams. But if there's a game where somebody misses time and Dwayne Harris needs to take on a bigger role as a receiver,
you need to be ready.
You need to have some other options. That's why I think it's important to say, okay, hey, we can see Perkins serving in this role. We can see Shepard serving in this role. And Orleans Darko or somebody
sure.
in that role and so forth. So, you know, it's like it's good to at least understand perhaps what they saw out of them in college and whether mm-hmm. or not that could translate over. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat. We will be getting to your tweets. We're going to open up the phone lines as well here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Glad you could join us on Wednesday's edition. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow. And remember, fans, Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings. Now, if you've never played on DraftKings, it's changing the way we play fantasy sports. Just pick your contest, pick your players, and if you win, pick up your cash. Simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to claim your free entry today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. All right, let's open up the phone lines. Without further ado, Dre is in Atlanta. He gets us going here on Wednesday's edition of the program. Dre, what's happening?
What's going on, Lance? Hey, P-Dot.
Hey, what's going on, Dre?
Not much. I don't mind being a leadoff hitter.
There you go.
You know, there's one thing I noticed this year. This is just a different vibe. It seems like with a new coach, there's a level of hunger. And when you bring new talent onto the team, because I really enjoy this draft. I like the players that we brought in. And a lot of the players currently on the roster are pretty much on that bubble. You know, they have been duly noted that they have to perform or they will lose their spot. And I think that hunger is going to make us a better team, and it's going to push some guys. Some guys who like Andre Williams, who I love to death, but he hasn't really shown anything, maybe because of lack of opportunity. But with the acquisition of Perkins, it adds more of a dimension of an urgency for him that he has to ball out, because now you have Perkins who can run, who can catch, and play special teams. If, you know, with some coaching up, you know, that puts him on notice. Same thing with, you know, Danelle. If he, you know, he's got the clear, but if he can't go, there's somebody to take his place. Same thing with Cunningham. You know, we have a lot of players that we brought in that are hungry, and some are undrafted free agents that are hungry. And players thought that they were cemented in their positions are now, you know, seem like to be, they could possibly be uprooted. So I like the hunger, and the competition is going to be fierce. And it's going to make us a better team. I think, you know, we got some of our grades were low because we didn't pick who some of these analysts thought we should. But, you know, they don't work for the Giants. They don't, you know what we're looking for. So I don't pay them any attention. But I just wanted to see what you thought about the hunger, you know, and who may be on the outs if they don't perform in minicamp and our training camp.
All right, Dre. Well, the only thing I would say is this. The Giants did not lose last season because of a lack of effort. They tried hard. Trust me when I tell you, guys were hungry to win. Guys were breaking their butts. They were working as hard as any team I've ever seen work, but it just didn't happen for them for a variety of reasons. But I said this many, many times when people kept asking me about Coach Coughlin and they kept asking me about this team and what was short about the team. And I was like, it's not about the effort. They're not quitting on this coach, and they're not quitting on themselves. So I would say to you, be careful as you throw around that word hunger, because this entire building was enveloped in a horrible gray cloud for all the losing that was going on. Everybody felt it. Everybody was miserable, and everybody in the building was trying to change it. So I don't think there's a difference in hunger. What I will say is there's certainly going to be a pressure felt because of the potential for some of these new fellas to come in, unknown. Anytime somebody from the outside comes into your office and you don't know what they bring to the table, it gets your attention. Doesn't necessarily make you more hungry, but it gets your attention. And production is going to be the key element here as these guys compete for not only roster spots, but for snaps on game day. So I'd be careful about throwing the word hunger around. I don't think that really applies.
Well, I would agree with you, Paul, and the one thing I'll add to Dre's point about the competition, and that was to me a big theme out of this year's draft.
Yes.
It was, you know, not so much who can come in and be a starter day one, Paul, but who can strengthen second row on the depth chart, mm-hmm. who can strengthen third row on the depth chart. And that gets to the point that Dre was just touching on. To me, is what you did was you're going to have some really good fighting going on for who wants that third running back spot,
yeah.
who wants that fourth running back spot. And that addresses what they had to deal with last season, which was as a result of the injury bug. Remember, Paul, it wasn't so much that they were losing starters. They were also losing the primary backups
to the starters. It was tough.
So, therefore, think about all the players that were promoted from the practice squad and a lot of free agents that came in late in the year who didn't necessarily...
Jasper Brinkley ended up starting at middle linebacker.
Who didn't necessarily know the system or needed a few weeks to know the system to make a true impact on this team. What they want to do now for this year is, we know our fourth running back, he can step in right now. He knows the playbook, and there is not going to be a drop down in production.
And
that's,
again,
to me, the theme.
And again, no disrespect to Brinkley, but he was not considered to be a starting middle linebacker on this team until many, many weeks in, because all of a sudden guys are just dropping like flies, and he actually did a more than adequate job when he finally got into the game. I just stress to you, it's not about wanting or hunger. It's about production. You know, you might be the nicest guy in the world, and you may want it more than anybody else in the world, but if it doesn't translate to production, you're not getting the ball.
And my last question. Now, you know, it's rumor, but what's the possibility if Anthony Davis does rescind his retirement? What would the Giants have to give up if he's willing to come into to the Giants? What would he have to give up to get him? And I'll take that off the air.
Okay, thanks, Dre. Here's the only thing I will say about that type of situation. Anytime you have a retired player, his rights still belong to the team that had him before he retired. No move can be made with a retired player until he applies for reinstatement with the NFL. And so at the moment,
nothing's been official.
Nobody can talk about him, and nobody can do anything about him because he is on the NFL's retirement list. Now, does that mean you can't talk? Any team can call up the Niners and talk? Sure they can. Any team can call up the 49ers and say, listen, you got a retired player over there. We'd like to talk about him. A, can we have permission to talk to him and see if he really does want to come back and play? And then B, what is the compensation that's required? And that's really the way the process is going to have to go.
Now, not to get too much of a hypothetical, but just to briefly address the second part of Dre's question, if we use another trade, just for comparison's sake, and this is just a hypothetical, Ryan Clady was moved not too long ago from the Broncos to the Jets.
For a five.
For a five. Now,
and there was a seventh rounder thrown in.
There was a seventh rounder with Clady that went to the Jets, correct, for a fifth rounder. But just to use that as a ballpark, if you like to play the game of what a guy would cost. Now, Anthony Davis is younger. Anthony Davis also doesn't have the same injury history, per se, as Ryan Clady. You'd have to take that into consideration when you would say, well, what would a team have to give up? Just as at least a ballpark figure to see what the market's like right now.
Bottom line is, at the moment, he is retired and therefore not open to conversation.
Absolutely. With that being said, let's move on to more phone calls here. Certainly appreciate those of you chiming in on today's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. AJ's in South Carolina. AJ, what's happening?
Thanks for taking my call.
Hi.
I like the Eli Apple pick. Do you think they might move Jenkins to the slot or the Apple to the, on the outside?
That's how I think it's going to start this season. I don't know what Steve Spagnuolo's plan is. I'm sure it's a wait-and-see thing, because they'd like to know how well acclimated he's going to get to Spags' system. And, of course, they still want to know how well Jenkins is going to acclimate to the system here with the Giants. But I would think right now, and Dan Shanka from Our Lads agreed with me yesterday when I said this, you will probably, early in the season, see Apple and DRC on the outside in the sub-package and Jenkins sliding down into the slot spot. That's probably the way it's going to start.
Well, I mean, it's interesting because
that's what I think too.
Well, I was just going to add, AJ, I think it's interesting based on, you know, that how that conversation goes, only because, Paul, when you look at how the Rams utilized Jenkins, you know, from what I recall, he was mainly an outside guy.
Yes.
He wasn't necessarily utilized
That's
in the
true.
Slot. Now, that doesn't mean that a team can't use him elsewhere in a new scheme, in a new system, but I would think at least first taste of him being outside before maybe throwing him inside, depending on, of course, what the ceiling is for Apple early on and what they see progress-wise out of him.
I think you don't pigeonhole anybody into any
Correct.
Spots right now. You just kind of wait and see how the field goes.
But you do want to play to, I think, a player's strength who's
yeah.
at least a free agent. And if you know, hey, when we looked at the tape, he's effective on the outside, I don't know if I'd want to toy with him so much.
I'm still
right out of the gate.
Thinking that that's the way it's going to wind up, though, at the beginning of the year. That's just my thoughts. Go ahead.
AJ, you got anything else?
One more thing. I know Wells said he wants to come back to the Giants. Do you think the Giants might consider, like, signing back for, like a one-year deal?
Well,
go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, I've been on the record. I'm going to continue to say this, Paul. I think that they're going to give these young safeties every opportunity to compete for these roles, and especially now with them drafting Darian Thompson. You could certainly make an argument there's room for veteran leadership in that group. I'm not going to deny that. I just think they want to give this young nucleus the best opportunity to solidify roles.
The only thing you'd want to keep in mind there is that Olivier Vernon said that he talked to JPP and Antrell Roll when he was picking a team in free agency. Now, I'm sure that the Giants' offer was ultimately the thing that brought him to New York. However, he did say he got glowing reviews about this organization from both Roll and from JPP. So if Roll was helping to recruit a player to the Giants while he was on the Chicago Bears, I think that tells you what he still thinks about this franchise and probably leaves the door open from his angle in terms of trying to come back.
Well, and AJ, appreciate the phone call. The other thing, you got it. The other thing I'll add to that, and I mean, I think it's been well documented, Antrell Roll, his feelings for the New York Giants. You know, if it's a type of situation where no team jumps on him, and, you know, you're in training camp, Paul, there's no crime in bringing him aboard and, you know, letting him compete. But it really depends on also the taste that I got, and he recently did an interview, I believe. I think it was on
The Fan.
The Fan. It seemed to me, Paul, that he
right.
wants a starting job still. He doesn't want to necessarily come into a situation where he's maybe being that mentor slash rotational guy.
And when you consider that the Giants folks here have talked about giving these young guys a chance and giving them room to grow, it does seem like right now, immediately, there's not a match. But again, I just allude to 2011, and I think I said this on the show the other day, when Deion Grant was out there and he was sitting by the phone and nobody was calling, and then the Giants got to training camp and all of a sudden some guys got nicked up and they needed to call Deion Grant back, and he came here on a supersonic jet, landed here at the Meadowlands, and he was inserted into the three safety package, and the Giants won a Super Bowl, and he was a big part of that because of the three safety package. So could something like that happen? It's already happened before, so don't call it impossible.
And they brought back Stevie Brown and Craig Dahl last season. So even more recent examples of where they have turned to previous players. And you did bring up Deion Grant, I think, is a good example. However, in terms of at least the coaching connections, and I was discussing this with some people on Twitter, when Roll was here, he was here after Spags left. So he did not experience Spags' system when he was with the Giants, because he came here
correct.
In 2010. Doesn't mean he can't adjust to Spags' system, but there's no carryover or connection between Spags and
no.
Roll, at least, as there was with Craig Dahl, who knew the system because he was here the first
time. That is correct.
With Steve Spagnuolo.
That is correct.
Let's head back to the phone lines. We got Ray in Clearwater. Ray, what's happening?
Nothing much, man. Love the show, guys. Thank you so much for keeping me sane during the offseason.
Well, thanks so much for tuning in.
You're sane and I'm not, so this is a great phone call.
Yes, this is a great balance
okay,
of
well,
two forces.
I'm a first-time caller. I just had a couple of questions, really. Even though I'm really tempted to kind of jump on the bandwagon and basically ridicule the Giants about the offensive line, I'll resist. I'm interested in the safety competition that we have going on. We have a number of young players, and, you know, due to some unforeseen and uncontrollable circumstances, it seems that, you know, everyone's gotten hurt. I was curious to know, in your opinion, obviously, if the safeties that we have, would anyone be viewed as someone that could be shifted to linebacker if they don't quite cut it at the safety position, or are they all seen as pure, free, and strong safeties, and, you know, if they don't impress, will they be cut?
I don't see any of the Giants' safeties being linebacker material, contrary to a lot of folks who at the end of last season were screaming for Landon Collins to be turned into a weak side linebacker. I mean, I had heard a lot of people saying that. The Giants view him as a safety, and that's where he's going to be. And no, none of the other guys have physical tools to be able to convert to linebacker, at least not as far as I'm concerned.
I mean, the only other guy that I would throw out there, but, you know, I'm just appeasing to your question here. I'm not necessarily saying that I think it's possible. I think Cooper Taylor's got the size to maybe perhaps do that, but they have also viewed him strictly as a safety. To answer your question,
he's
not
thick enough.
I mean, in terms of he'd have to put on a little bit more muscle, but I think if anything, he'd have the frame if he were to adapt to that position, just to answer that question.
Okay.
Matt Burhey, to me, is a safety, and a lot of these other guys, Mykal Thompson, Bennett Jackson, they're safety slash corners. I don't see how they would transition to a linebacker. And I think that the Giants view all of these guys as safety slash corners. Remember, I'm not ruling out that B. Jackson and Mykal Thompson could very well get time in the slot and could go back to cornerback. I would not rule that out at all. But right now, I think they're viewing these guys, they're going to go out there, they're going to compete at safety, and let the best man win.
Yeah,
I hear you. I mean, I was definitely thinking about Cooper Taylor when I asked that question specifically. And I obviously was thinking, I was also thinking about Mykal and Bennett Jackson as being those swing guys who can play safety and cornerback. And I was wondering if the Giants see that value in people being able to play multiple positions, would they be more likely to stick even if they don't impress a lot in the safety position?
No, I'm going to be honest with you. The Giants need production. They don't have the luxury of just sticking with a versatile guy because he can play more than one position. They need guys who can produce and give them quality snaps wherever it's going to be. So my answer to you is the best 53 are going to make this team, and I don't think the versatility factor is going to play a large role in it. Will it play part of a role? Sure. You always consider that. But ultimately, production is going to be the bell cow for anybody who makes the squad.
And, Ray, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. The one thing I will add, Paul, I would say if two players are of equal talent, then I think special teams, their contributions there could be the difference maker in who they decide to keep, whether it be a running back or it be, you know, a defensive back. Hey, we got two equal guys. All right, who can we put out on two of the four special teams units?
Sure.
Then maybe that extra player gets an edge. But, you know, if you're saying, well, this safety, we think we can move him to linebacker down the road, that I don't think is the rationale behind why you keep a player.
No, under those circumstances. I do think, though, that, you know, you look at a guy like Bennett Jackson, who started as a corner and then was going to be part of the safety mix. And now, quite honestly, I'm not sure where he's going to work this summer's training camp, whether or not he truly is working at the safety spot. Now that they drafted Thompson, they may just decide, you know what, this team's a little thin at corner. Maybe Bennett Jackson starts working back at corner
again. I think makes sense. And so, I think getting Mykal Thompson some reps in the slot, which we saw earlier.
Yeah.
That, I think, is something.
But he's not going to be at corner. I think Jackson could truly be working as a corner. Jackson, not so much.
You mean Thompson, not
Thompson.
So much. Yeah, well, because Jackson was drafted as a corner out of Notre Dame. He made a positional transition, whereas Thompson, he was injured last season. So it's sort of where does he still fit in because it was a redshirt year. I want to get to some tweets, and we will get back to the phone calls. A lot of activity on Twitter, number of good questions. So let's get that into the program. This comes from @E_TheChosenOne. Can you guys touch on us drafting a safety after Jerry Reese seems so confident in our current ones? Well, I still think it goes back to competition. That's what I think it goes back to. And it goes back to the fact that while there is confidence and upside, Nat Burhey missed all of last season. Mykal Thompson missed all of last season. Bennett Jackson missed all of last season. So you still really don't know, based on much that you saw on the field, what you're going to get out of them. If they felt that Thompson could be an instantaneous contributor, can add more depth and compete, that to me is the value of bringing in a safety.
I'm going to make it real simple for you. Look at all the safeties on the Giants roster today. Combined, they've got a total of 16 starts of NFL experience. All of those starts belong to Landon
player.
Thompson.
Yes.
That says everything you need to know about the Giants' safeties going into this training camp. They don't really know. Look, they can project. They know that they like certain skills of certain players. But could they really project right now what the production's going to be from those guys, given the fact that they had three injured redshirts? No, they cannot. So drafting a guy like Thompson, who we've heard from a number of people now say he was a second-round value until the combine, you know, dropped his dash, his 40-yard dash number down. Look, I don't have a problem with them taking a guy who they have a very strong belief in, who, by the way, is coming out of college healthy without any injury issues.
And has a lot of experience and graduated.
So, you know, I don't see him adding him to the mix necessarily as an indictment on anybody. I just think it's being realistic.
Well, and I'll take your stat a step further. You mentioned they only have one safety with 16 starts. That's Landon Collins. Then if you take into consideration appearances, Paul, you throw in Cooper Taylor and Nat Burhe, which means you only have 32 appearances, because I was looking this up early this offseason.
Right.
32 appearances over the course of their careers with your entire safety group at this point.
And if you wanted to go even further, count the number of snaps, and that gets scary.
Now you want us to do too much math here, Paul. I think we'll leave it at that. At E underscore the chosen one has another good question here. Do you guys think Goodson is going to compete for middle linebacker spot or maybe just depth at Sam or Will?
Well, we've heard the Giants say he's versatile enough to play some on the outside if necessary, but I think they're drafting him to compete at middle linebacker. And boy, is that crowded right now, that spot, between Shepard and Robinson and Brinkley. They've got three veterans, plus they got a rookie coming in. That's going to be one heck of a competition. Now, one of those guys will probably then be in the mix as the backup strong side to Kennard, I would think. And let's not forget, Mark Herzlich is still here too, you know, as a backup who was going to be fighting for a roster spot, and he plays special teams. I'm not going to handicap that race right now. I think it's way too early to do it because there are a lot of horses in it.
Correct, which is a good thing. I mean, they certainly can take a look at a variety of people. I would think with respect to Goodson, which was...
And Unga, too. Let's
and Unga, too. Don't forget about him, obviously, with his experience last year. But with respect to Goodson, at least, the benefit for him is, in his Clemson career, he started in the middle, he moved to the outside, and then he went back to the middle. So he's had a taste of a variety of positions.
Yeah.
If they feel we can have him as a backup where he can learn multiple spots in the defense, that's not a bad thing.
No.
Where he can be the backup outside guy, and he could also be that maybe third or fourth middle guy as well.
And, you know, we say this every year, and please, knock on wood, that it's not the determining factor, but sometimes injuries in training camp or injuries in the preseason determine your 53 for you. Sometimes you don't get a chance to evaluate talent against talent. Some guy goes down, some guy gets hurt, some guy gets nicked, some guy gets dinged, and guess what? You're healthy. You make it.
More of a reason to teach everybody multiple positions, so this way you can plug them in under the circumstances of, God forbid, an injury. Let's head back to the phone lines, and we'll get to more of your tweets, so we certainly appreciate those of you who are not near a phone. Continue to chime in on social media. John is on the line. He is in Maine. John, what's happening?
Hello, fellas. Good to talk to you.
Same here.
First of all, I really appreciate what the Giants did in the offseason. I think they did about as much as they could to improve, you know, to shore up the points where they needed to. But I want to call him about a little off target just now, just before training camp starts. And I'm concerned about the injuries we've had. And I know we have a new group running the show. But, you know, like every receiver we've drafted in the last 5 years has had a bad first year of injuries. Reuben Randall, Sonaris Moss, you were down the whole list. And now the last year or two, the defensive backs have gone down. So, you know, I remember two guys in one game went down for the season. And I don't know, you know, if this is a factor or not, but the reason I bring up this is that I remember a game last year where they seemed to be running on this funny-looking little rubber ball surface or surface over the turf, and people were slipping around. And I wonder, just, I don't know anything, but I'm just saying, I wonder if the surface of the field or the practice facility might be a factor in these injuries.
Well, they have got scientific folks who are in charge of installing and, of course, examining the surfaces, whether they be here at the stadium or at the Quest Training Center. To my knowledge, everything has been up to spec. They've been very satisfied with the facilities themselves. And they've been chalking this stuff up to bad luck. I mean, unless there's scientific evidence that indicates there is a problem physically with the turf, and if there is, I'm sure they're going to change it. I can't imagine that they wouldn't. I will tell you this, though. Not that this has anything to do with your question, but my understanding is that the artificial turf at MetLife Stadium is being replaced for this upcoming season because it's due. You know, they only have cycles and lifespans of all of these artificial surfaces. And, again, I'm not in any way saying it's a bad surface, but according to the maintenance schedule, I have heard they are putting in a new field at MetLife Stadium this year.
And
I know that doesn't pertain to your question so much, but that's all I can tell you.
Well, John, the other thing to take into consideration, and listen, I appreciate you going digging in deep into perhaps the rationale behind injuries because, I mean, it certainly is a fascinating topic, but you know, you also need to take into consideration the types of injuries that some of the Giants players suffered last season. A torn pectoral muscle, for example, by Jonathan Hankins, I really don't think that has anything to do with the turf. Or a hamstring injury, I don't really think has much to do about the turf. I think when you look at the style and the type of injuries, while it may be, hey, maybe they need to look into the turf and so forth, you know, some of these injuries, hey, it's just as a result of being physical on the field. And that's
frankly,
unfortunately what it is.
If you logged all the Giants' injuries, it's not like they only happen at home or only happen at a certain place on the road. They've been snake bitten in a lot of places.
Correct.
I see. Good, good. Okay, just a thought. And I'm sure they all are looking into it and have been always monitoring it.
Oh, I guarantee you there are guys spending sleepless nights trying to figure this out.
Yes.
Oh, well, good. Now, I don't have to spend any sleepless nights on it.
That's good.
Get some rest. Plus, John, you don't have to waste your time because Paul is going to have sleepless nights on all of these topics. Anyway, wherever the fan base leaves off, don't worry. This man has plenty of sleepless nights ahead of himself. So don't you worry about John. Yes.
Thank you, John.
Fellas.
You got it. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in. Well, they have a new strength and conditioning coach, and remember, they brought
Aaron Wellman
correct,
from Notre Dame.
They redid the entire weight room. I mean, they have made a number of tweaks thus far in this offseason to see if they can, you know, change the schedule. Forget, you know, the ins and outs of the physicality of football, just the pure schedule and the type of weightlifting and so forth that goes into it.
You know, I'm very interested to see when the Giants finally get to opening training camp. And we still don't have an opening date, by the way, of training camp. We have not been given that.
Which is killing you, by the way.
It is killing me.
I know. I can tell already. That's why you raised the question.
My calendar is actually shaking on the wall in my office at home because
that's a special calendar.
It's not settled yet. And until it's comfortable and settled, it shakes on
the wall. But let's face it. I mean, not that you don't have other things on your plate, Paul, but as if anything else is going to take priority. You know, it's basically if you had anything filling up that section of the calendar, that drifts to the side, and then in comes the training camp schedule. I mean, let's face the facts here. Come on.
Day one of training camp is like New Year's Eve for me. Okay?
Which means nothing else compares to it.
I'm not worried
about the welfare of your calendar. I'm more concerned about your own welfare than the welfare of your calendar.
All right, here's what I was going to say, though. Honestly, Coach McAdoo has already told us he is going to change up the weekly schedule during the season. He is going to give the players off on Monday and then bring them into work on Tuesday. Now, in years past, guys would come in on Monday for treatment, for film, and do whatever it was that they would got to do, and then they would have Tuesday as their off day. He's looking to change things, if for no other reason, because this team has been so often snake-bitten in the last few years, they keep trying to find something that's going to keep this team healthy. And so, you know, last year we had the, quote, spa days, you know, at the end of the week.
On Fridays.
I mean, so this time, this year's change is players off on Mondays. And let's see how that rolls. And if it works, I guarantee you they do it again next year.
And that's the whole point, too. You know, it also goes back to what you and I touched on yesterday, Paul, with also new members of the coaching staff brought in. Just the fact that you have new voices, sometimes all it takes is a different perspective, a different tweak from what you had done for all of the last few years. Not that that hadn't been successful, but they may see things a little bit differently than perhaps the previous regime. And that doesn't necessarily hurt.
And when things haven't necessarily been going as well as you'd like them to, you're willing to try almost anything.
Let's get back to Twitter here, and you could still give us a ring at 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. At Brent_Tapdat. You would think, by the way, that Jennings ended last season. Perhaps they will not necessarily rely on a running back by committee approach this season, and perhaps somebody will assume the main role. I don't know if you can necessarily make that assumption. I think with a lot of versatility in the backfield, I could still see a variety of different backs getting involved, especially if Perkins comes in, Paul, makes a statement. They're probably going to find ways to get him involved. Shane Vereen is not being eliminated from the offense. If anything, I think there's room to get him more involved based on last season. And Jennings, you know, clearly has shown based on what he did down the stretch. So I don't think you could go and say, oh, well, Jennings got hot in the last few games, Paul, and now all of a sudden it's going to be him getting 25 carries and then they'll just sprinkle in a few other guys.
If anything, I think the Giants' plan last year of divvying up the carries throughout the course of the season to keep these guys as healthy as possible probably was the one thing about last year that really came through according to plan. Because for the most part, these running backs were available all season long. Very rarely did you have any running back in a given Sunday, you know, be on the shelf or be limited. They, for the most part, had all of these guys at their disposal. And that's the first time in, wow, you'd have to go back even before Bradshaw, because Bradshaw was always hurting and always missed time during practice. And you never knew how many carries he was going to give you on Sunday because, you know, he was a gamer, but he was hurt. I mean, you'd almost have to go back to Tiki to know that, hey, every Sunday we're going to be able to count on these guys to carry the rock or to come out of the backfield. The Giants haven't had that luxury in a long, 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 long time. So the divvying up of the running backs last year allowed them to have that comfort zone. Now, there are those people who said the guys didn't get into a rhythm and maybe it hurt the overall ground game. You know what, folks? I don't know the answer to that. I'm sure the Giants coaching staff is still trying to figure that out. But they did benefit, at least to some degree, about, you know, of having these guys available to them. The last thing in the world you want is for going into a game on Sunday and not knowing how many running backs you're going to be able to activate or how many carries that guy can give you, because guess what? The rest of our running back corps is in the trainer's room. That's bad.
And they've also adopted the philosophy to answer the question about, you know, riding the hot hand. So even if you have, let's say, four running backs on the roster and are also dressing for game day, Paul, if Jennings is getting into that rhythm, as we saw late in the season, they were just continuing to feed him the ball.
Well, the comment from both Coach Coughlin and Coach McAdoo was, let's see if somebody grabs it.
And he did.
When Jennings grabbed it, they kept going to him.
And then you go back to, I remember the Cowboys game when Darkwa had his, hey, look at me, I could be productive game. He also was a guy that started to get a lot more carries in that contest. So there's been evidence of that, and that would be the ideal circumstance. Hey, starting in week one, somebody develops rhythm, and you allow him to be the workhorse, and then, you know, you work in based on third downs some of the other playmakers. But having multiple options I don't think is necessarily a bad thing. I think that's certainly a positive. Speaking of the running back situation or the backfield situation, at 1102 Joey M, hi guys, great show. I'd like to know if our fullback can be more of an offensive threat in the scheme.
I don't think that Nikita Whitlock, if he is the starting fullback this year, gives you a lot in terms of offensive production other than whatever blocks he throws. He's not going to do much with the ball. But if Will Johnson turns out to be the starting fullback and he beats out Whitlock, then I would say he is absolutely a guy who can do something in the passing game. Not that he caught a ton of balls with the Steelers, but they were not afraid to give him the ball because, let's face it, he was a tight end by trade who played H-back and also played fullback. He could be utilized somewhat in the passing game if they want him to be. But again, I don't know how that competition is going to sort itself out either, because there are some folks who think that maybe Will Johnson will just be the inline tight end blocker, and maybe he won't be in competition with Whitlock as the fullback, but he's going to play more of either the H-back or the inline position. And that's not what Whitlock does. Whitlock is a fullback. So I don't know if they got room to keep them both. I really don't, to be honest with you.
And also keep in mind, this is connected to the running game. Speaking of blocking, Paul, when Jennings got hot down the stretch, they were utilizing the fullback a little bit more,
yes,
too. And Whitlock was on the field. So I think the value of having that strong blocker is important. It's nice, and to me, it's a luxury to have your fullback be able to catch some passes, and I would agree with you. I think Will Johnson has shown that, but even if you go back to the days with Henry Heinoski, Paul, it wasn't as if Henry Heinoski was walking away with four or five catches every single game.
No.
He was an option, but he wasn't necessarily a big, prolific role in the offense.
I know we have to go. I leave you with this thought, folks. For anybody who still doubts what I'm telling you about the offensive line, when you have a suspect right side of the offensive line that does not run block very well, the importance of a blocking tight end and or a blocking fullback becomes 10 times more significant than it does if you have a stud five-man crew up front that is just going to rogue grade its way down the field like what the Dallas Cowboys have. Okay? The Cowboys don't need a punishing fullback. The Dallas Cowboys, when they want Witten to help block, he'll do it because he's really good at it, but they don't need him to a lot of times because their front five will punch you in the mouth and push you out of the way. It's that simple, folks.
Offensive line certainly provides an added benefit where you don't necessarily have to worry about all the combinations, and we will continue to break down the Giants roster. Speaking of blocking tight ends, we hope to perhaps be joined by G.A. Mangus, Jarrell Adams tight ends coach at South Carolina tomorrow. So hopefully stay tuned for that as we will continue to have Big Blue Kickoff Live each and every weekday here on Giants.com starting at noon Eastern. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Medow. Appreciate all the calls and the tweets. We'll speak to you tomorrow right here on Giants.com. Have a good one.